Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. Welcome.
Good to be here, Dennis.
The big political story, Laura, last week, right up to this Monday evening as we go live, continues to be the FBI search of former President Trump's Florida home on August 8th. This afternoon, Trump's legal team asked a federal judge to appoint a special master to oversee a review of classified documents and other materials the FBI seized from Mar-a-Lago, and to force the Justice Department to provide a more thorough explanation of why that search was necessary. Now, we know that the same judge is weighing a request by news agencies to unseal the affidavit filed by the DOJ explaining the need for a search. While all this is going on, Laura, Iowa Republicans in the congressional delegation continued hammering the FBI in the wake of its search, and it doesn't seem to be letting up.
No, it really isn't. And I've been following some attorneys who deal with these kind of cases because I'm not an attorney, and this certainly isn't an area that I've researched a lot in the past. And the attorneys I follow have been very confused by this motion that was filed today. They said that normally one would file for a special master immediately within a day or at most 2 days after this kind of a search. And in general, the motion that was filed was strange. It didn't really refer to appropriate case law. And so they didn't seem to think it was very likely that this was going to work. But the former president certainly has a lot of Republican politicians still running interference for him. And that is what we're seeing from Iowa's congressional delegation, at least the ones who are still talking about this search of Mar-a-Lago. They are very sympathetic to the former president and not to the FBI's position.
And one of them is Republican Senator Chuck Grassley, who wrote to the Attorney General.
Yes, and this was echoing comments that Senator Grassley has made on his social media and also on various television interviews, that he feels that this is partisan, that the FBI and Department of Justice are revealing a partisan agenda. And he asked Attorney General Merrick Garland to focus on violent crime, fighting violent crime, rather than what he called pursuing opportunities to disparage political enemies. So really not acknowledging at all that there could be any substantive reason for the search, just focusing on the fact that it's an unprecedented search and that Trump is an opponent of the Biden administration.
One of the questions, I think, in the wake of the search is whether it has revived President Trump. He was sort of in a down cycle right until that search took place. And now the Republican Party in general has risen up in his defense, saying anything having to do with Trump is illegitimate when it comes to law enforcement.
Yes, I think that, and for people like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who have been trying to get some oxygen and build up their own profiles, I don't think it's been very helpful to them to have Donald Trump back in the news so much. But we still have no idea where this is going, what kind of charges, if any, might be filed. We know broadly that the FBI was retrieving boxes that they felt should have been with the presidential archives, but we don't know details about what kind of classified material is in there. And we don't know yet what we are going to learn about the affidavit. The affidavit is what the government submitted in order to get a judge in Florida to sign off on that search warrant. And so far, that is not public.
One of those who might be running against Trump hasn't announced it yet, but he certainly appears to be making the moves is former Vice President Pence, Mike Pence, who came to the Iowa State Fair this past Friday afternoon. It was raining on him, unfortunately, but he was joined by what we can only call a cadre of Iowa's Republican political candidates and incumbents throughout the afternoon. Chuck Grassley was there. Second District GOP incumbent Marionette Miller Meeks was there. Fourth District incumbent Randy Feenstra was there. Third District candidate Zach Nunn. It was a litany. So he's walking around the fair and he's saying a lot of things about the search at Trump's estate. And we'll get to that in a moment. But the question of the second here for me to you, is there any path that you see for Mike Pence to run for president against Donald Trump?
Former Vice President Pence insisted that he was only in Iowa to support Senator Grassley's reelection. But of course, whenever somebody of his stature comes to Iowa, people start thinking about running for president. It is very hard to see what his path could be. The recent polling in the Des Moines Register shows that most Iowa Republicans want Donald Trump to run for president again. But even if Trump doesn't run, I don't really know who in the Republican Party it would be leaning toward Pence as opposed to other people. The hardcore Trump fans think that he was disloyal for not throwing out the electoral votes from some states. And there are going to be several candidates running, trying to claim the social conservative mantle, which was always a strong base of support for Mike Pence when in his previous offices. So I really don't see a path for him. But it was interesting, all of the Iowa Republican office holders, I mean, they were happy to be photographed with him and walking around with him at the fair, even though it was the worst weather of the 11 days of the fair.
So he had a number of good quotes out there at the fair. He said that calls to defund the FBI are, quote, just as wrong as calls to defund the police. So he was pushing back against a lot of incumbent office holders out there across the country who have just denounced the FBI as being politically motivated.
Yes, he was very measured. And he did talk about how the search was unprecedented and that we can demand that the Justice Department reveal why the search warrant was executed. I should add, by the way, that it's not clear whether the authorities, the judge in the case in Florida, will agree to unseal that affidavit. I saw that there was a statement today that it's possible that unsealing the affidavit could reveal some information about Secret Service operations in Mar-a-Lago that perhaps they wouldn't want to do, just from a security perspective.
The former vice president also said at the state fair, as he had earlier in the week, that he would consider a formal summons by the January 6th committee to testify about what happened a couple of years ago. So he says he would consider it. That doesn't mean he would do it. But if he did it, it would really open up some primetime ratings. It would be the biggest hit of the summer, probably.
Probably. The January 6th committee is going to come back and have more televised hearings in September. And certainly that would be important. I mean, I'm surprised that he hasn't volunteered to talk with them already. Obviously, he was privy to some very important discussions. They already had an entire televised hearing that was focused on the efforts to pressure the vice president to toss out some of the electoral votes. And so he would be a key witness. But I am a little bit skeptical, since it's so late for him to be saying that he might be open to a formal summons. I don't know that the ball could really get rolling on that fast enough for this to happen before the election.
Based upon what we know about polling across the country, and certainly in Iowa, but across the country, spreading it out, if Donald Trump wants the nomination of his party to run for president, I believe he gets it. If he doesn't want it, Ron DeSantis appears to be right behind.
He would certainly be the front runner. But remember that during the run up to the 2016 caucuses, the lead changed hands several times. Ted Cruz was in the lead for a while. There was Ben Carson. So things could change for DeSantis. But certainly I think that if Donald Trump is physically healthy and planning to run for president, I don't think anybody can beat him in a Republican primary. I've seen some speculation that in a small field, possibly, but I don't think it would be a small field. I think there would be several candidates, and Trump would almost be guaranteed to get that 40 or 45 or 50% of the vote. It's just hard to see. But DeSantis, I mean, the Republican electorate does seem very favorably inclined toward him, but I think there's a lot they don't know about him yet. Scott Walker of Wisconsin for a while was riding high in the polls, and then he didn't really go anywhere before the Iowa caucuses. So if Trump doesn't run for president, I think it is open with DeSantis starting out as probably the front runner.
And we shouldn't let this go without bringing up Liz Cheney, she's still the congresswoman out of Wyoming, but she got blown out in the primary last week. I mean, blown out, 66-29%, which is almost unprecedented for an incumbent. She says she might run for president. There's absolutely no path for her to run for president in the Republican Party. One would think that she's only perhaps thinking about doing this in order to try to get Trump on the same stage and embarrass him.
And I really question whether other presidential candidates would even agree to be part of debates that she was part of. I mean, we may see that the traditional primary debates that are hosted by major television networks, those may not be happening anymore on the Republican side. We may see Republican organizations holding their own debates or forums to which Liz Cheney would probably not be invited.
You know, it's an interesting thing, and this is not part of our agenda for tonight, or wasn't until right now. I wonder if televised debates are a thing of the past, as we say, because Trump certainly abused it, and I'm saying that in a factual way, by trying to talk over Joe Biden during the debates there. He wouldn't allow the president to speak. I wonder if it's just a format that doesn't work anymore because too many people are abusing it.
I think that the news media will always be interested in debates. There's always a chance for something newsworthy happening in a debate, some kind of surprise. And so I expect that there will still be media attempting to hold debates. Whether candidates find it in their interest to participate, I'm not sure.
Speaking of candidates finding it within their interest to participate, Republican candidates, as you have written, and the Post and the Times have written nationally, GOP candidates are shunning traditional forms of the news media, and in Iowa's case, they are shunning the Iowa State Fair, the soapbox that the Des Moines Register has had out there for decades. They are not taking part, GOP candidates. Democrats still are. What's going on there? Why do you think that's happening?
Well, this is a long tradition at the State Fair. The Des Moines Register puts up a stage on the main thoroughfare right across from the grandstand, and they give candidates an open mic basically for 20 minutes. They're very flexible about the scheduling. This is not an interview format. This is just candidates can get up and talk for as long as they want, up to 20 minutes. They can talk about who they are, why they're running. And it's been something in the past that most candidates have participated in. I went back and looked at my archives going back to 2010. And it used to be that most of the Republicans nominated statewide or federal offices would make time during their state fair visits to stand on that stage. But this year, the only three Republicans who accepted the Register's invitation were challengers running against Democratic incumbents. So those are people who can really benefit from exposure. But all of the incumbents, from Chuck Grassley to Kim Reynolds and everybody, Mike Nagy, the Secretary of Agriculture, the Secretary of State, Paul Pate, and the candidates, the three members of Congress from Iowa, none of them agreed to do the soapbox. So I do think that they are just finding it not valuable anymore. They feel that they have a direct line of communication through their social media, and maybe they don't want to give the Des Moines Register the legitimacy in the past. We've seen also that Republican candidates are less likely to sit down with major newspaper editorial boards than in the past. So the Des Moines Register, Cedar Rapids Gazette, Sioux City Journal, these newspapers are finding it more difficult to get GOP candidates to meet with them.
One more note on the State Fair. You reported that more than 4 years after signing into law a ban on using public money to promote the name, likeness, or voice of Iowa's elected statewide officials in paid display at the State Fair, well, guess who's doing that? Governor Reynolds continued to spend part of her office budget on a State Fair booth plastered with her name and picture.
As I've been following this story since 2018, because this was something called the self-promotion law. It was tacked on to a budget bill at the very end of the 2018 legislative session. The Republicans said at the time that they were targeting the state treasurer, Michael Fitzgerald. They didn't like that his office ran radio ads and they had a state fair booth that had his picture on it, his name on it, talking about the treasurer's office programs, and they wanted that changed. And so over the summer of 2018, the treasurer's office and also the attorney general's office and the secretary of state, they all revamped their state fair booths to remove any pictures or names of the elected officials. But when I went to the fair that year, I saw that Governor Reynolds and Lieutenant Governor Gregg still had the same booth that they had been using before, that had their pictures and names all over the place. And when I asked about it at the time, I was told that the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, which is the entity that enforces the self-promotion law, that they had decided that any money that you spent prior to July 1st of 2018 was fine. So this was a booth that was purchased prior to July of 2018. Well, every year I've found through my other records requests related to the governor's office budget that they continue to spend $4,200 a year of state funds. This isn't the Governor Reynolds campaign funds. This is state funds going to rent that space in the Varied Industries building. And again, all of the other state officials' booths have been changed following the passage of that law so that they don't have Tom Miller's name or Secretary of State Paul Pate's name or Treasurer Fitzgerald's name. So it really sticks out like a sore thumb. But the Ethics Board Executive Director told me that when I asked, is anybody ever going to look at this again? And he said, well, nobody's asked us to revisit that opinion.
Didn't you ask him to revisit that opinion?
Well, I have not formally submitted a request to revisit the
Okay.
I sent an informal journalistic query, but I guess in theory, somebody could file a complaint with the Ethics Board, and then its six members would have the final say. And by the way, the six members are all appointed by the governor.
All right. Well, with that, it's 16 after the hour. Where has it gone already? Wherever you're listening to us, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We're here every week at this time to talk politics, Iowa style, how it's affecting all of us. Let's spend a minute or so on Libertarian gubernatorial candidate Rick Stewart, who wants money from Democrats.
This was a very strange story. And the Libertarian Party has had a real reversal of fortune since 2018. Their candidate for president in 2016 got almost 4% of the vote, which was enough under Iowa law to give them what's called major party status. So they were technically, legally, they were on the same footing as Democrats and Republicans. And they nominated a whole slate of candidates for all the congressional seats and all of the statewide offices in 2018. This year, they have Rick Stewart running for governor. And that's it. They have no one running for Senate or any of the U.S. House seats or any of the other statewide offices. So I thought it was a little strange for Rick Stewart to say that he wants Democrats to support his campaign for governor when it doesn't really make any political sense for Democrats to support a third party candidate. I mean, they might be pleased that a third party candidate is on the ballot because Libertarians are perceived to draw more votes from Republican candidates than from Democrats. But it's, I mean, if Rick Stewart wants a little bit of help to boost his candidacy, then probably his party should be nominating more candidates for other offices, I would think.
Yeah, and he had a great quote, Mr. Stewart, a colorful quote. He said, "Come to my house, knock on my door, and put bundles of hundies in my hands." Hundies, of course, being $100 bills. We'd all like that to happen.
And Iowa has no campaign contribution limits for statewide offices. So people can give Rick Stewart as much money as they want. There is no limit to how much people can give Rick Stewart. But that doesn't change the fact that for a Democrat, it would be not a very logical choice. Now, a Democrat might sign a petition to help a Libertarian qualify for the ballot or something, but to actually fund a Libertarian's campaign doesn't make a lot of sense unless you support the Libertarian ideology.
If anybody wants to put bundles of hundies in my hand, message me and I will tell you my address and I will give you the glad hand if you give me the hundies in my hand. All right. Cindy Axne, 3rd District Democratic incumbent, has made abortion a central issue in her reelection campaign, coming out with an ad showing her opponent, State Senator Zach Nunn, during a TV debate this past spring when he raised his hand to support the idea that abortion should be illegal in Iowa with no exceptions. Okay. So this is really what she has to do because, you know, we had that internal poll a couple of weeks ago. We don't know how accurate, showing Nunn ahead of Axne. She really has to hammer him on abortion.
Yeah, the internal polling does seem to suggest that it's very competitive. And as soon as that debate happened in May with WHO TV, political reporter Dave Price asked, just show of hands, who supports a ban on abortion with no exceptions? And all the candidates running for the seat raised their hands. And I just had a feeling that that was going to show up in a TV ad because it was such a striking visual. And we now have more than a dozen polls of the national generic ballot since this U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in that Dobbs decision. And most of those polls do show movement toward Democrats on the generic ballot. And also we had, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, we had that referendum in Kansas, which is a more Republican-leaning state than Iowa, where voters overwhelmingly rejected a constitutional amendment that would have allowed the legislature to ban abortion. So this is like all signs pointing to Cindy Axne. This is what you should be focusing on. And that's what she is doing. And she has raised a lot of money. So she has plenty of funds to be on the air, really, from now through Election Day. I'm sure she'll be running different ads, not just this one. But I expect that this won't be the last one that will focus on abortion as an issue, because that is just critically important to Democrats' chances in this election.
And this 3rd district in Iowa is going to be one of the most focused on races nationally across the country. I mean, really, maybe a defining district in terms of who controls the House of Representatives.
It's very competitive. It split almost right down the middle between Trump and Joe Biden in 2020. And Cindy Axne is one of only seven Democrats in the U.S. House who hold seats that were carried by Donald Trump. Technically, he just barely edged out Biden by a few hundred votes. So it's seen as, for the Republicans, one of their top pickup opportunities, but it's very competitive. And both sides are going to be needing a strong turnout. One thing we don't know is the independent, those are the voters not affiliated with either party. Traditionally, in a midterm election, the turnout among independents really drops off by a lot. And so it's probably going to be important for Cindy Axne to try to boost that independent turnout a little bit, because as a group, voters not affiliated with either party tend to be supportive of legal abortion.
Okay, let's talk about a report that the Iowa Capital Dispatch ran last week, saying that some Democratic Party leaders believe the National Committee's delay of that decision, finalizing the presidential primary and caucus lineup until after the midterms, could hurt Democratic candidates' chances in Iowa. What say you?
Well, again, I thought this was a little bit strange. The main person quoted was Dave Nagel, who for many years was an Iowa representative on the Democratic National Committee. He's been very involved. He helped save Iowa's first in the nation place in the 1980s when there were states trying to displace Iowa and New Hampshire. So he's really been involved in this caucus fight for many years. But I think that the assumption that he was making is that it's hurting Democrats because what if the DNC announced right now that Iowa would still be first, that would be helpful because we'd have more potential presidential candidates coming here. But as we've talked about, it's unlikely that Iowa is going to maintain that first in the nation status. So I don't think it would be helpful for Democratic candidates or the DNC to make that official before the election that we're putting another state in front of Iowa. And so in that sense, I mean, it might not be helpful. The delay might not be helpful, but it might be less harmful than the DNC just deciding in August, which was their original schedule, that no, sorry, Iowa, the caucuses are not first anymore.
Right. Let's move down to Summit Carbon Solutions. We have about 7 minutes left here. Of course, they want to build a carbon capture pipeline through 700 miles of Iowa. One of three companies that has proposed doing that. It's going to be opposed by a significant number of people. And a district court judge, as you have pointed out, has ruled that the list of landowners who have not agreed to voluntary easements for this pipeline, they're going to have that list released to the public so we can see it. We know that Summit Carbon has only been able to grab, well, about less than half or so of the needed agreements to sell land so this pipeline can go through. So this is going to be a long, drawn out and controversial process.
Everything I hear from my contacts in rural Iowa is that this pipeline issue is huge. And Summit Carbon Solutions, I should say, is only one of three companies that want to build these carbon dioxide pipelines across Iowa, but they have very prominent local supporters, and they are a little bit more advanced in the process than some of the other proposals. But in some very heavily Republican counties, we've seen boards of supervisors formally object to having the pipeline go through. And as you mentioned, this district court case is important because the Sierra Club Iowa chapter, which is one of the environmental organizations that's been most involved in opposing the pipeline, they've been trying to get a list of these landowners who refuse to sign off on the easements. And Summit Carbon Solutions did not want to give that up because they didn't want that to become an organizing tool for the people who oppose the pipeline. But now that the district court has ruled that that a list must be released to the public, that could be helpful for the people who are mobilizing against the pipeline. But I should say, again, this is a really potent issue in a lot of counties. In March, when this was being debated, I heard that from several independent sources that Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley was at a legislative forum back in his district in Butler County. And the people there were so angry about the pipeline that they didn't want to sign his nominating petitions to be on the ballot because they were just angry that nothing was being done in the legislature to try to limit eminent domain for this kind of project. So this is going to be one of the most contentious political issues coming up in 2023, I think.
For landowners who were bruised by the Dakota Access Pipeline fight, this seems like deja vu all over again.
Yes, and that's something that the people, the Food and Water Watch and the Sierra Club Iowa chapter, that they've been emphasizing in their public statements, and they've held press media events to talk about how in these places on the farmland that the Dakota Access Pipeline went through, farmers do see poor drainage, lower yields, there's soil compaction from all of the construction equipment, and it takes a long time for the land to recover from that kind of thing.
Okay, the coronavirus. Now that schools in Iowa will be starting this week, now that the state fair is over, it's a good time to update the situation. Let's talk about how the coronavirus, probably a surprise to a lot of people, it's still spreading throughout the state.
Yes, most of the counties in Iowa have high community transmission at this point. And really, the hospitalizations shot up quite a bit in the last month or so. They dropped in the last week. They dropped substantially by about a quarter. But we still have more than 200 people hospitalized for the coronavirus. And that's a lot higher than it was a few months ago. And on average, the daily deaths are about five people. That's coming out to 150 people a month. I mean, that would still be putting COVID-19 about the third leading cause of death in the state right now.
And we really don't know how many people are getting it because there's such a prevalence of home testing that's not being reported by people.
Yes, very few of those positive tests from the home kits are being reported. And so the hospitalization numbers, again, I have long felt that the hospitalization numbers are more important to track than the overall case numbers. But the hospitalization numbers were really quite high, higher than I expected them to be this summer. And then, of course, we just had the Iowa State Fair, which had record high attendance, and kids are going to be going back to school this week, as you say.
Matter of fact, the state fair was reported this Monday afternoon, drew more than 1 million people, 1.1 million, fourth highest, and 128,000 or so went this past weekend on one day. Did you get out to the state fair?
I did not because of my broken ankle. I didn't get to the fair this year. I had somebody out there taking some pictures for me to use on my website. But yes, I heard that on Saturday they broke this. They were very close to breaking the single day attendance record. The weather was very good on Saturday, especially compared to Friday.
And with just a couple of minutes to go, a monkeypox call center number has just been rolled out in Iowa. Monkeypox, of course, a relatively new disease. A little bit more than a dozen people have gotten it in Iowa. Let's talk about this call center number.
Yes. So the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services, this is the merged Department of Human Services and Public Health. They have rolled out this monkeypox call center. It's open from 8 to 4:30 on weekdays. The number is 515-725-2081. You can also look up monkeypox on the Iowa Department of Public Health website. And there is information. The staff are going to be answering people's questions about the vaccine. Vaccine supplies are still very limited. So they're only available right now to people considered to be in higher risk groups for transmission. But the state is trying to get hold of more vaccines. They've had several thousand doses of vaccine so far, and they're trying to distribute more.
Let's give that number again. It's 515-725-2081.
Correct. 725-2081.
Between 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. All right. We have about 45 seconds left. Whew, busy show. What are you looking for this week? What do you anticipate might happen this week?
I'm looking to see, always interested in kids going back to school. I've heard that a number of school districts in Iowa have teacher shortages. I'm wondering if we're going to see bus driver shortages or things like that are going to disrupt schools. I wonder if some districts are going to have to consolidate some classes. So I'm curious to see. There are very large numbers of unfilled teaching positions right now across the state of Iowa.
And of course, when you go back to school, there's always the chance a new outbreak of the coronavirus.
That's right. And if also technically monkeypox, it is possible to spread through close contact. And so I've heard concerns that schools or daycares could be settings where we might see monkeypox. So far, it's been predominantly in the adult population.
All right. We've got to go. See you later.
See you later, Dennis.
We are out of time. You've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be right back in the same time slot next week, we promise. And we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style, and we hope you can join us. Until then, thanks so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it very much. Between now and next time, let's both have a safe, healthy, and happy week.